Well, I thought it was, I've got a couple things I might share with you, but I had an understanding somehow that, I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order and let the record reflect it's 2:34. We have an attendance from the council. You'd like to introduce yourself?
Mike Gay, District 2.
Matt Carlucci, at large, Group 4. I don't see any other council members in attendance. Can we leave that door kind of half open?
Yeah.
I like a little bit more than that so people know we're in here and they want to come in, they can. That's perfect. The way I like things done. And Corey, introduce yourself.
Corey Armstrong, Executive Council Assistant for Councilmember Matt Carlucci, taking minutes.
Okay. And Kim Taylor, is Phil Peterson with you?
I'm over here.
Okay. Get up here, please. Yeah, I'd like for Kim and Phil to be up here. You know me, I lean heavily on the count, or you can sit over there, it doesn't matter. You can sit right here. You do a better job than I would do. But thank y'all for being here. I don't like to do anything without the council auditors looking over my shoulder. And then why don't we introduce who's all out in the audience just so we can and we won't worry about a microphone. Just Carnell Oliver, we've got you here, and the nice lady from the school system. What was your name again?
Wesley, Duval County Public Schools.
What was the first name?
Courtney
Wesley, Duval County Public School System. My hat's off to you. I love the public schools. And we have Rose Nettles in the back, who I've known since she was 12 years old. And John.
Philanthropic.
Boy, you've come a long way since you first started coming to City Council on my watch. And then,
Bethany Bryan,
right, and good for you to be up here. If you'd like to step up here too, it might be well for you. So just come on and grab a chair. And so we are here to talk about a couple of issues. And my colleague here, Mike Gay, I guess I called the meeting. I forgot who called it, but my premise of calling the meeting was to allow myself to be acquainted with some of the things that are important to you, I think, with the procurement code, and you may be still ironing all that out, but I'd like to at least be, know what's going on and be in the mix. So I'm going to turn it over to you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Carlucci, for inquiring and setting this meeting up. Kind of give a brief overview. We had a meeting this morning with the administration and going through some more details. As you know, the procurement restructuring bill has been in the works, and we have been kind of going through it and seeing where else we need to tweak it. One area that we are proposing an amendment is the owner direct purchase material, which is a tax savings benefit to the city of Jacksonville, as we are an entity that is tax exempt, and we have not been fully exercising the opportunity to use that advantage to keep money back in the city.
Explain that a little more.
So basically, in a
I don't mean to interrupt, but I just
it's quite fine.
My interest.
And it's I've been around it so long, so I take a lot of it for granted that a lot of people understand all the nuts and bolts of it. But basically, on just an overview, say our capital project, say if it's $5 million project and you've got $2 million that's material, we would bid the project out. The bidder would include sales tax and everything in his price. We have come to a consensus with Public Works that we're going to have a just in regular general purchasing contract. We would at a $100,000 threshold, we would up to that. That's the starting figure that we would deduct purchase material over that threshold and over, and direct purchase it, deduct it from the contract, deduct the sales tax, and the sales tax comes back as a savings to the city. So basically, you know, 7% that whatever we purchase, we'll gain that benefit back.
They're purchasing instead of the contractor?
Right. They basically still retain the liability, responsibility to acquire the right material, install it in a timely manner to have the project completed, plus the warranty on the material. All we are is a purchasing conduit that we use that to pull our sales tax back and save that 7%.
And that's anything $100,000 or more?
That was we basically come to an agreement with I wanted it less. They wanted it more in Public
Who's
Works.
They?
Public Works.
Okay.
And so they're looking at the labor manpower factor it is to chase down the paperwork on it. So we kind of agreed on the threshold on general purchases being at the $100,000, and then that definitely makes it worth our while to even if at some point that we talked this morning about that last year they had they used it sparingly, and I believe Mr. Peterson they had like a $1.5 million sales tax savings that they had for last year. That's just a drop in the bucket. I mean, we've got projections anywhere from 16 to 18, $20 million that we'll be able to start capturing back every year. And depending on what we spend, and that would justify what we call an ODP, owner direct purchase specialist, that sits there and tracks and makes sure this money is coming back into the city.
Okay. And have the auditors been involved in this? I'm sure they have.
Yes, Mr. Peterson's He's been listening to me for quite a while now.
Did you ever get him to turn his thumb up? I'm just wanting to know.
He's, I think we're getting there. It's really been more a, Mr. Peterson and NOGC has been all for this. I think the getting the working plan in place with Public Works and with procurement, getting everybody on the same page and what is doable and comfortable is what I've been trying to, you know, make sure everybody's on board with it.
Council member, are there any cons? You've told me all the pros. Is there any, what's the other, is there another side of the story why we might not would want to do this? I mean, it sounds like it makes so much sense. I'm wondering, you know.
Yes, sir. I mean, we've, like I say, we've done the, been through a lot of the devil's advocate and going through it, and the biggest factor was pushback or concern was the cost to administer it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we dialed in with Public Works this morning at a $400 per invoice. So you may have a direct purchase that's got 30 invoices. Mm-hmm. You may have a direct purchase that's got one invoice. So everything is really, can't sit here and put a hard figure on what every purchase order will be. But at the end of the day, when you're saving anywhere from $14 to $18 million a year, I think that $400 an invoice is a good investment.
Is there a reason why the contractor would object to that, council member? Having the city buy.
And I would say the only reason they would object because they've never been involved in it. Mm-hmm. And I've been discussing this with Council Member Pittman, and I plan on getting more involved with the helping a little bit with JSEP to bring them up to speed on what kind of advantage it would be for their buying power. Because, you know, a lot of our JSEP, they struggle to be involved in projects because they don't have the credit, the buying power to get the material to compete against the others that's been established and can get the credit. Well, here's what we're doing, $100,000 for the regular contractors that are not involved in the JSEP. But the JSEP program, we're going ahead and shrinking that on down to where there's a $10,000 capacity that we can bring them in, and they'll be able to purchase material that's $10,000 and above that will help them.
Okay.
That the
so JSEP has a lower
threshold.
Yeah. Okay.
It's to help them to be able to compete on these bigger projects that, you know, that normally they wouldn't have the buying power, but now they'll have the city's buying power.
Mm-hmm. Kim, do you mind if I ask the council auditors for their view on this?
Sure. I'll let Mr. Peterson weigh in, too, because I know he was involved in the meeting today with Councilmember Gay. From our perspective, it's the efficiency thing that the Councilmember Gay has talked about.
It's the what?
The efficiency.
Okay.
Because there is a cost. You are, in essence, when you do the direct buy, you're not paying the contractor. So you don't have a contract, so there'll be payments where you've got to do kind of a separate purchase order to say we're now going to buy the goods. And so that's the part he's talking about, that there is an extra step, and that's why the dollar threshold got raised some, because there is, you know, you're not going to save that pure amount. You've got some costs that offset that with staff time.
Okay.
Separate but processing.
If and the savings, I think Councilman Marie said maybe 12 to 14 million a year, maybe more. So it seems like that would more than pay for staffing necessary.
It absolutely should, and we have no objection, obviously, to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of, you know, on the technical side, getting everything processed correctly where we don't have any issues. But that should not stand in the way at all of actually doing it. So I don't know if you want to add anything else.
Gosh, why didn't we think about this? Why didn't I think about this a long time ago?
In reality, it is we do have a tax savings option listed deep down in our purchasing codes, but it's not been brought to the forefront to say you're going to use it. Mm-hmm. It's not an option. It may be a little bit of extra work, but we all have to work. And so the money's there, and it validates, you know, there's we need to capture this money back.
Well, I can't say that I disagree with that. Okay, so that's one.
But a little bit more on the city purchasing the material, the contract and the rule or the guidelines that'll be in the contract with the contractor is specifically will be outlined that, you know, that the material will be they'll give us the purchase order. We will deduct that amount plus a sales tax from their contract. They will still retain the responsibility to install it, get the material here on time, and warrant it. So that will not be relieved. We'll just be a conduit. Mm-hmm. And that's what they'll have to do with Dustin is get dialed in on that procedure.
Okay. All right. What else is there that you're working on?
We also we've been, trying to get dialed in on a local preference option. We're seeing it all over the state and other municipalities to where, you know, there's an effort to take care of the citizens that's been here in business, plowing and planting, working hard for all these years and just really getting no recognition.
Mm-hmm.
We go down to Sarasota. They have a 10% local preference. You go to Tallahassee, Leon County, Jefferson, Taylor.
What does that mean, 10% local preference?
And basically, one structure is to the when a bid comes in, if you are a local bidder and a non-local bidder is within a 10% range lower than you, you have so many days to accept that price, to lower your price to that low bid to be able to get a local contractor, get the local work. So that's one of the things we've been looking at, but as talking and doing some more research, seeing, you know, that would be beneficial, and we're looking to broaden our local preference, our local, identification would be locals that are within our Northeast Florida regional footprint.
Mm-hmm.
So that would include those seven counties that we would consider local.
Hmm.
And so St. John's County has already done this, but they haven't opened it up to anybody else. And so we would have to work with them to get us included in their local. But
reciprocity there. Do you mind if I ask
go ahead.
The auditors a question? We've tackled local preference. I say we, councils that I've been a part of over the years have, and I'm sure parts of councils I have been a part of, have always looked at local preference. Do we already weight the score on these bids when they come in as to if you got local folks or not?
Through the chair or to Councilor Carlucci. So RFPs the city puts out does have a weighted element for whether you are in Duval County or not. I want to say it's 5%. It's a very fairly small percentage.
5 points on an RFP.
On an RFP of 100 points, you can get 5 if you're local. So there is some element of it, but what Councilmember Gay is describing is if an outside entity even beats a local entity with those 5 preferential points.
Well, on the ITB.
On the ITB, sorry.
Right.
Explain ITB.
I'm going to defer to the
is
expert.
Basically, you got your RFP where they come in and you're rated
mm-hmm.
by points. An invitation to bid is a cold, hard bid.
Oh, that's what the ITB is, invitation.
Right. Okay. Invitation to bid. So
yes, sir.
There's no preference in that.
Okay. No preference on that. So go ahead.
That's the only preference I'm aware of that we have in our procurement.
It's on the RFP side of it, whereas there is a
points given for local businesses.
So, Councilman, So where is your concept different from what we already have in the weighted system?
Okay.
You probably already said it.
No, that's fine. We last week, you couldn't be here when we had the notice meeting. There were several companies that came in, and once we moved to doing a regional footprint, they were all for it. So there was no opposition from the businesses. But taking it from that meeting and doing more huddling up, we've actually looking to move, not go and do just a 10% and just say the top guy, the top contractor, he gets the local preference. Where JSEP does a participation, a goal, and I know they don't like me to use the word goal, but that is just what we're looking at doing is moving from the top company being local or non-local, but whoever would get the job is going to be required to have 50-40% local participation. And then that way it really branches out to all the community, all the businesses to be involved, mm-hmm. and not just one local contractor gets it, and then it goes awry from there. So this would, we feel like, kind of going with the footprint that JSEP is doing, and JSEP will still have the first and foremost. So if there's a 20% requirement or 40% requirement on the job, and JSEP is 20, well, 20 will go to JSEP, and then the balance would be looking to go to local preference. Mm-hmm. So JSEP would come first. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are in the process now of bringing it in and zeroing in on that. And so I'm waiting for, after we left the meeting this morning, Dustin's going back and going to get some more data for us for our notice meeting on Thursday. And that's what we're looking to bring in. And I really feel like that's going to be the win-win for the city to be able to reinvest into businesses, big and small, here is with the participation goals.
Oh, okay. Well, so there's a meeting Thursday. And I apologize, I couldn't make the meeting last week, so thanks for taking time to meet with me today. But I have to tell you, I was having more fun where I was last week than what I would be having up here.
I understand.
Vacation. We vacation in the fall. We don't vacation in the summer. That's when we go in the fall when it's cool. So we'll have another follow-up meeting. Do y'all have any comments on we'll go to the public in a minute, but Kim and Phil, do y'all have any?
I think Councilmember Gay summarized it best as he was shooting for one thing, working with Public Works and procurement. They've come to an agreement on how to carry out his ultimate goal of the sales tax exemption and then also the local preference. So I think it's getting to much more fine-tuned, everybody's in agreement of how to carry out these two initiatives.
So it's gaining some traction, it sounds like.
At least from the administration side. The where we got this morning was more detailed than the notice meeting that was held last week. So I would expect at the next notice meeting you'd have more council members weighing in on where we are.
And just to reiterate what Councilmember Day said, the biggest point that we heard as the sticking point was limited it to just Duval County. And so opening it up to the other neighboring counties, considering them local, I think is what relieved the biggest points of contention.
Right.
Who had the points of contention?
It was the underground utilities. They had an issue, and I understand where they're coming from. We don't want to create a – if we've got a company here that does a lot of work in Clay County or St. John's County, we don't want to make a hostile environment for them to go down there.
I got you.
And so we want to be sensitive to that. Okay. And that's why doing the Northeast Florida regional footprint, it kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have another
is there another proposal
that you have with procurement?
No, sir. That's I mean, there's other items that we have on the Amendment 1, and a lot of that is administrative request that Dustin Freeman needed to get included, and so I sponsored all that as well. But that's pretty well the two main ones that I've been working on myself.
Wow. Okay. Well, let me just say, you know, as a colleague on the council, I think what you're doing, first of all, I really want to compliment you on it. It's not just anybody can jump into procurement and start making changes. It's a pretty complicated process. And I've always liked the idea of a local preference that was amicable and worked. But the tax savings on the other, I just really commend you for the thought and the forethought you put into it. Wish I could say I had done that once upon a time, but never did. But that's I look forward to hearing more about it.
Well, the other thing with the auditors, they've in the administration have come to agree that all the tax savings goes to District 2.
Well, that's my district also, so I have no problems with that.
They always take the laugh as a yes.
You know, you could always tell, you know, he's talking big picture, but at the end of the day, it's District 2, though, right?
I didn't say at some point we'll share.
Well, listen, that's my district. District 2 is my district,
I know
too.
It.
No, I think it's great, and you know, people can say what they want, but you can't really move the needle ahead for Jacksonville if you don't have some fuel in the tank.
Exactly.
And this is just adding more fuel to the tank if we can make it work. And I really do commend you for the amount of work you've put in there for that. I had a couple of things I was going to talk to you about, but not in great detail because they're just getting fleshed out, but more as a chance to, you know, let you know a couple of things that I'm working on and that I have been working on for a long, 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 long time. I don't even want to talk about the details on it now because it's still being fleshed out. And I'm trying to make the auditors happy, trying. And but it's the real trio of buildings that were built after Jacksonville burned down is at the corner of Laura and Forsyth Street. And you got the Marble Bank building, and you've got the Florida Life building, which is on the Laura Street side. And next to the Marble Bank is the Florida Life and the Bisbee building, built like 1902. You should see the vaults down in the basement of the Laura Street, the Marble Bank building. It used to be, I think, the Mercantile Bank of Jacksonville, and Barnett was like right next to it. But that corner is probably our most, in the view of our local historians anyway, and regional historians, is the most significant historic corner in Jacksonville. And so back in 2002, the ownership of those three buildings was foreign. It was foreign ownership, I think, from some investors in Germany, and they were fixing to take the wrecking ball to it. And there's no other corner in the country that is like this one. This corner really gives Jacksonville its sense of place in the country and in our own community and in our own city that people could take pride in. They were built like in 1903, I mean, right after the fire. And that's why I say the great city of Jacksonville, because we burned down to the ground. I mean, we could have rolled over and said, you know, let's go to another cities and start all over. But architects like John Clutho and engineers, when they saw our ashes, what they saw was opportunity.
That's right.
And so they came in and the architecture of those buildings is second to none. There's four stars you can get up to on historical preservation. They're a four star. John Delaney, myself, Audrey Moran, who was a council liaison back in those days, there was a bond issue that was being done. And they did bond issues different back then than they do now. But I was able to convince John Delaney, the mayor, to put enough money in to buy those three buildings. And those three buildings are the most important historical gem in downtown. From architecture, from being in the absolute core of downtown, and they will be a little cluster of, it'll be a restaurant, housing, affordable housing, and a first-class Marriott hotel. And the Marble Bank building will become a restaurant, somewhat like maybe the Chop House is. But where it's situated is in the core. And so, you know, our downtown is got boundaries better than that. You know, our downtown goes all the way down to the sports center and to Brooklyn, the South Bank, back up to about where we are now. And that's the downtown boundaries, but that's not the walkable core. The walkable core is like right where, starts right where the Laura Street Trio is. And so as we develop over by the sports area of downtown, and as we develop Brooklyn, hey, I'm okay with that. That's all good, okay? But true downtown development, in my view, you've got to develop from the core out, from where the heart is out. Otherwise, you have a donut. And there's a lot of significant restoration and building going on in this core area. And this trio, I think, will prove to be the linchpin to really moving the needle ahead for the core of downtown. And once we do that and some other things, downtown will begin to generate the tax base that it used to. And you used to could say nowhere in the city contributes more to the budget the block per block than downtown. I'm not sure that's true anymore, but it should be true in any town. And cities, as you know, are known by their downtown. So I want to at some point talk with you more about that. And then the other is every great city has a history museum that talks about their own history. And when you get right down to it, in my view, of course I'm prejudiced because I'm from Jacksonville, but our history is phenomenal here. Going back to the Timucuans or the Timucuans back in the 1500s. If you go to Tampa and St. Pete, and I'm not saying we have to be like Tampa and St. Pete, but I'd love to have their tax base. I guarantee them to you that. is because they've been working on bringing places and venues for people to come to. Jacksonville needs its History Center, and we're kind of moving the ball on it, but it's really slow. And so I have a bill at some point coming before the council on that, and if I could call a meeting with you on that, I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more about it, and the other area that we had talked about moving our local preference towards is our development and our REV grants that they also, giving them concessions that they're using the local participation. And so we hope that we get there at some point in time, but I think it'll benefit what you're talking about, and there's nothing better than investing wisely and efficiently in our city.
Right.
And that's what I'm all about.
Well, I don't disagree with that at all. I'm not sure what contractors are looking at, but they're looking at a contractor whose size is such that it would help with the economic viability of it. So I don't know what is going to be local preference. I know one thing. These are three damn local buildings that we need to save, and it's like it's fourth down. We're on the 5-yard line, and there's 5 seconds left in the game. And the Steve Atkins and his group are putting their very best play together, you know, to try to get the ball over the goal line. And this has probably been one of the most important issues to me since I can remember. So would love to share that with you and the other.
Look forward to it.
Okay. Is there anything you'd like to bring up? I'm good. Well, we have Carnell Oliver, your card. You can step up. And then this has got to be John Nunes. I can't read everything on there, but I'll let you tell me all about it.
Yes, my name is Carnell Oliver. Address is on file. I think I want to highlight one thing, the tax exemption. From what I'm getting as far as an example, so we're going to have some kind of function of Sam's Club where contractors or vendors can be able to have better access to being able to provide, to have access to goods and services, which is perfectly fine in that perspective. But ultimately, what would be the ultimate opportunity for minority business owners? Could they possibly get some kind of form of a tax exemption underneath the city tax exemption? Could they go out there and use that in the private sector just to give them a jump start, maybe for a number of years, for 5 years, right? That is something that I'm thinking about as I'm listening to the dialogue. That's number one. Number two is when you talk about local preference, are you saying a contractor in Nassau County that wants to do work in Duval County, are they going to bring people from Nassau County, or are they going to use workers and subcontractors right here? It's all right if we're going to do it regional, but I want you to clearly outline in the language of it if there is a regional process where we use outside contractor, they have to use local subcontractors. That needs to be written out very clearly in plain English. And also with the $10,000 exemption of the JSEP program, is there going to be any benefit to grow it in a sense? Because I really don't see there's too much growth and too much economic development. The process is going to have to increase. I don't like the word goal. I like the word set aside. There's a guarantee that there's an opportunity for minority businesses in that perspective. But I guess when the rubber meets the road, there are two more things I want to bring to your attention. The other issue is that we got to pay our city workers, because you're piling more work on them, and they need to be compensated for this extra amount of work that you're putting on them. I think that's one of the things that needs to be taken care of. No, and I think one of and my last item would be on the executive side and on the council side, those that participate in the procurement system, is it possible that there can be a cap on number of projects that they can participate in or dollar amount cap? I don't want nobody to manipulate the system to serve themselves, because your overall goal and objective is to serve the citizens, and I yield my time on that.
Tough crowd tonight, I'll tell you. I'll tell you. All right. Well, I'll just get right to it. John Nooney, name and address is on file. When I saw the notice, I had no idea what it was going to encompass. I thought a lot of it was going to have to do with waterways, tomorrow night, both of your co-sponsors there'll be a public hearing on naming the new marina, and I was hoping it was going to be in rules and waterways. And, I support it, activation of our waterways, and then at the DIA, you all know we're bringing in a new drinking zone. I mean, the map is right here. So, I participated in four subcommittees, with the infrastructure, with Mayor Deegan, downtown riverfront, parks, recreation, neighborhoods, and resiliency. And so not once was water skiing even mentioned in any of that. So, I mean, I'm all, I think that's awesome, But anyway, getting back to procurement, my house, I'm next to a FEMA house that should have been demolished. So, procurement with that, and if we're going to be bringing in other neighborhood counties, bring them in and, get some money, just how easily that would be just to demolish, which it should have been, and revert that back to nature. And the reason that should have been done is just public access on the waterway. Just so you all know, I did go kayaking with my councilman, Kevin Carrico, on Friday. It was just awesome. Sandra Fetner, she was one of the chairs, and one of the biggest takeaways in this entire city is that 90% of the access to the waterways is private. Only 10% is public. I tell people we're getting crushed. Absolutely crushed. Pottsburg Creek, it's really a joke. But to Councilman Carrico's benefit, he'll have checked that box, and I give him credit for it. But there are still five at large. The North Florida Land Trust did their own site inspection. They recognize the recreational value. I got a FEMA shirt, my new shirt. This is Ian Criswell, Washington, D.C., head of FEMA. You want procurement? We could have a procurement party right next to my house. Gee whiz. I mean, if there's anybody that wants, a hands-on experience on demolition, there's over 2,500 billionaires in the world. And I'll tell you, it's working. We'll have another billionaire here, and then, just donate it, to the city for public access. And one, I'll just leave you this with Kevin. The thing with that is, when I picked him up, he goes, where did I park? I didn't have to park. I just launched from my house. So I go from the launch, pick him up, and then, go back to the launch. I'm just telling you, it is the lowest hanging fruit in the world. So as far as procurement, it's a big lift. There's no doubt about it. And just my hat's off to you. You're just, it's a wealth of knowledge, and it's above my pay grade with that stuff, but it is important, and you got to really just kind of spread that around. And like I said, procurement with demolition, you know, I met the guy that was supposed to do it. Something happened, and it wasn't right. So anyway, I put that on top of a procurement list. So thank you all for listening.
You've always been a huge advocate for the St. John's and our tributaries and everything there is. And one day I'd love to sit down and tell you the story of when we did the Goodby's Lake boat ramp. And it's wow, I'll give you the rest of the story. But but I appreciate you, John. I really do. I've known you for a long time. Carnell, thank you for being here. Does anybody else want to speak? What time was my next meeting? Was it 10 minutes ago?
No, it should be at 3:30.
Oh, 3:30. Okay. Well, Carnell, you've had your chance. Look, I'm going to be flexible with you. I just want to make sure that Rose, the lady from the school board, would y'all like to speak? Okay. And Carnell, if you can keep it, you know, to a minute or so, and I'll. Yes, he does.
And the thing about it is that before he loses his breath and God's green earth, he needs to be recognized for what he did. You're an enlargement. This is nothing very controversial, but I'm asking for one favor, just one kind of favor from you. Put the man's name on something. He's always talking about Pottsburg Creek. Give him something. When he's long gone, people can see him.
Well, you know what? I think that's a very good suggestion, and I suspect his name's going to pop up on one of our waterways opportunities at some point, and I will take that into consideration as an at-large council member. And council member, are you ready to call it adjourned?
Yes, sir.
Adjourned. Thank you.